Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 11, Jarabharat instructs King Rahugana. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The materialistic mind, covering the living entity soul, carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. So please repeat after me. The materialistic mind covering the living entity's soul.
The materialistic mind covering the living entity's soul
carries it to different species of life.
Carries it to different species of life.
This is called continued material existence.
This is called continued material existence.
Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. The living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness.
The living entity suffers or enjoys the material distress or happiness.
Very good. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities.
The mind further creates pious and impious activities.
And their karma.
And their karma.
And thus the soul becomes conditioned.
And thus the soul becomes conditioned.
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Mental activities under the influence of material nature cause happiness and distress within the material world. Being covered by illusion, the living entity eternally continues conditioned life under different designations. Such living entities are known as nitya-baddha, eternally conditioned. On the whole, the mind is the cause of conditioned soul. Therefore, the entire yogic process is meant to control the mind and the senses. If the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled. And therefore the soul is saved from the reactions of pious and impious activity. If the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Shravai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo, the senses are automatically engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious. As soon as one always thinks of Krishna, he becomes a perfect yogi, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Yoginam opi sarvesam madgatenam taratmadha. This antaratma, the mind, is conditioned by material nature. As stated here, maya rachitam taratma sva dehinam Sangsriti Chakra Kuta. The mind, being most powerful, covers the living entity and puts him in the waves of material existence. Dukham sukham vyati riktam chatibram kalopapannam phalamabhyanakti alingamaya rachitantaratma svadehinam sansmritikutachakra. The materialistic mind, covering the living entity's soul, carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. So, how a living entity becomes conditioned has been very clearly explained here, just in one verse. These instructions are given by Jarabharat to King Rahugana. Jarabharat is a self-realized soul he was actually a liberated soul from his birth. Previously, Jara Bharat was the king of the entire earth planet, the son of Rishabhdev, Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj, after ruling the world for one Ajuta Varsha, that is 10 Ajuta Varsha is 1 million years. Yeah. 10 lakhs is one Ajuta. That means 1,000,000. Ruling this world for 1,000,000 years, one Ajuta Varsha, 1 million years, he retired, went to the forest, he went to Kulahasra, on the bank of Gandaki River, and there he was performing his sadhana. He was trying to fix his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, rendering service to the Lord in various ways. And although he reached the stage of bhava, he was experiencing transcendental ecstasy due to his love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But unfortunately, he became attached to a little deer. And due to his attachment to that deer, Bharat Maharaj, at the time of his death, thought of this deer. And as a result of that, Bharat Maharaj got a deer body in his next life. Although he got a deer body due to his sukriti, due to his spiritual activities in his previous life, he remembered his past life, the activities of his past life, and the cause of his fall down from the platform devotional service. So because he was a Jatishmar, he remembered his previous life. Bharat Maharaj didn't want to, although he was born in the body of a deer, within himself, still harboring that deep attachment to the Lord, and he didn't want to get entangled in this material nature anymore. So he left his dear mother and went back to Kulahasra. And there he started to stay there in the association of devotees. In the holy places of India, you find many pious, holy, saintly people residing. Though they are absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So, he went to Kulahasram to have the association of those sadhus. And he used to stay near them when they used to discuss Krishna Katha. This little deer used to just sit there and listen to them. And he was performing a life of austerity. Even as a deer, he used to eat the dry leaves. He wouldn't indulge in even eating soft green leaves or soft green grass. What was just for the sake of maintaining his body, the bare necessity that was needed, he used to accept that. Then after he left his dear body, he got the body of Jara Bharat. He was born in an exalted Brahmana family. And his father was quite an exalted person. He was absorbed in devotional service and serving the Lord. But Jara Bharat, his youngest son, he again didn't want to become entangled in family life. Therefore, he started to pretend as if he was deaf and dumb. He was Jara, he was retarded. And his father tried to even do his sanskar, make him chant Gayatri Mantra, but he would not learn it. So finally his father gave up. And when his father died, his brothers actually cheated him. They threw him out of the house. And Jarabharata used to roam around. And when some people used to give him some money, he used to work for them. He had a strong body, so people used to engage him in different activities. And in exchange, they would give him just some food. So then his brothers thought, it's a good way of engaging him, a good way of getting some free service. So they called him back home. And they used to make him work in the field, do all kinds of odd jobs. And in return, they would just offer him some broken grains, some husk of the paddy, and the cakes of the mustards and the oil after the oil has been extracted. So linseed, not linseed, it's called teal, sesame cakes. And they would just, and Jarabharata would just accept it as if it is nectar. So that is the exalted position of Jarabharata. Although externally he was pretending to be deaf and dumb and retarded without any intelligence, but within himself he was self-realized soul. And then one day when Jarabharata was guarding the field at night, some dacoits who were about to sacrifice a man to Kali, but the man ran away. The person they got to be sacrificed, he ran. So they're looking for, while they're looking for that man, they found Jarabharata in the field. So they just caught him, tied him up and carried him. And then through their concocted ritual, they were about to slaughter Jarabharata, offer Jarabharata to Kali. But Jarabharata, he did not do anything to defend himself. So they took Jarabharata, and when they were about to sacrifice him to Kali, Kali couldn't tolerate that. So Kali broke through the murti, the murti shattered, and she came out. And she jumped out of the altar, picked up the chopper from the hand of one of the dacoits who was going to sacrifice Jarabharata, and she killed all the dacoits. And in this way Jarabharata was saved by Kali. Then Jarabharata used to wander around. Then one day King Rahugana was going to Kapilashram. So while he was going to Kapilashram, he was going in a palanquin, and the chief of the palanquin carriers needed one extra man. And he found Jarabharata. So he took Jarabharata as a palanquin carrier. But Jarabharata was stepping like he will before. Before putting his step, Jarabharata was watching that he was not stepping onto some ant or some creature, living entity. And as a result of that, his movement was little erratic. And when you carry palanquin, everybody has to step on some with some rhythm. Therefore, while they carry palanquin, they sing some songs with some specific beat, and so that everybody can follow the rhythm and step. But Jadabharat, he was not listening to their music. He was watching where he was putting his foot. And as a result of that, the palanquin started to swing. So King Rahugana became very annoyed. So he said, why is this swinging? So then the palanquin carriers told that this one man, the new person, is not able to carry the palanquin properly, and that's why. Because of this one man, the palanquin is shaking. So then King Rahugana insulted Jadabharat in various words. First he told him sarcastically that you must be very tired from carrying the palanquin alone for such a long distance. So still Jadabharat didn't pay any heed. But then King Rahugana told Jadabharat, he got very angry, and he said that, "You living dead man, Jivan Mitra, are you dead while living?" And then he says that if you are not listening to my instruction, I will punish you. So then Jadabharat started to speak to the king. So when Jadabharat started to speak to the king, he first told that actually what you said is correct, that I am living while dead. I am dead while living. Because this body is dead. It's a dead body, dead matter. Whereas I am not this body. And the insults that you are inflicting upon me, maybe it will be nice to read them. Okay, just read from here. "My dear king, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you are thinking that you are the king and master and are thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are a king and I am your servant, but tomorrow the position may be changed and you may be my servant and I your master." Now who but Jadabharat can say that, because in his previous life he was a king. Not only a king, he was the king of the entire earth planet. But today he is the servant of Rahugana. "These are temporary circumstances created by Providence." "My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and that I am your servant, you should order me and I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and that I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? My dear king, you have said, 'You rascal, you dull, crazy fellow. I am going to chastise you and then you will come to your senses.' In this regard, let me say that although I live like dull, deaf and dumb man, I am actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true and I am a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There will be no effect. When a madman is punished, he is not cured for his madness. Then Rahugana realized his mistake. Then King Rahugana said, "O Brahmana, you appear to be moving in this world very much covered and unknown by others. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmana and saintly person? I see that you are wearing a sacred thread. Are you one of those exalted liberated saints, such as Dattatreya and other highly advanced learned scholars? May I ask whose disciple you are? Where do you live? Why have you come to this place? Is your mission in coming here to do good for us? Please let me know who are you." So in this way, King Rahugana inquired from Jarabharat, and then Jarabharat is actually instructing Rahugana now. And all that he said in few verses were saturated with spiritual realization. So in this verse he is saying, the materialistic mind covering the living entity soul carries it to different species of life. Now just see this one sentence is so filled with spiritual understanding. The materialistic mind carries the spirit soul to different species of life. So when the body dies, the soul doesn't die. Even the subtle body doesn't die. The death is only to the gross body. Doctor, you agree with us? The death is of the gross body. And the soul leaves the gross body. For a conditioned person, the soul is carried by the subtle body. And subtle body is made of what, Raghunath?
Mind, intelligence.
Okay, mind, intelligence and falsehood. So here, the subtle body is generally identified as the mind. So the mind carries the subtle body. And as the person acted in his previous life, accordingly his subtle body has taken the shape, or his mind has taken the shape. And according to the shape of his subtle body, the soul is placed in a specific womb. And thus he gets a specific body. Now this simple knowledge, the modern scientists do not understand. They do not have this basic knowledge. They do not have the basic knowledge because they don't accept the existence of the soul. So if you don't accept the existence of the soul, you can't comprehend these subtle knowledge. So in this way, the living entity, according to his karma, is going through different species of life, according to the shape of his mind. Now this is called continued material existence. This continuation from transmigration from one body to another body, according to the arrangement of the nature, is called samsara chakra or sangsmriti. Sangsriti, not sangsmriti, sangsriti. Sangsriti is commonly known as samsara, continued existence in the material world. Transmigration of soul from one body to another body. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Distress and happiness is actually due to the mind. Like that can, we can see that certain thing to the body, it is actually very painful. But because the mind is feeling the pleasure, the body, the one feels that it's very nice. There are so many examples. Like, for example, when one takes intoxicants, a drug, the body actually goes through an excruciating pain due to that. But because the mind is in a state of illusion or hallucination, one feels that it's so nice. For example, people even take snake bite. Like those who, in the early days, mainly in countries like China, where people were into taking drugs, they used to take different types of drugs, and then finally they would come to opium. Like probably you know that before Mao Zedong, China was actually taking a lot of opium. They were just drugged, the whole nation was drugged. And he practically woke them up. He banned opium. And not only opium, like a time used to come when they would stop taking, opium wouldn't have its effect. So what they would do? They would take a snake bite. And through the snake bite they will experience some pleasure. Now, consider like any sane man. I mean just the sight of a snake is good enough to freak him out. These people voluntarily would take snake bite. Why? Because that snake bite would give them some pleasure in the mind. Although the body is going through an excruciating, painful state, but they will feel, they'll voluntarily accept it, because the mind will experience certain pleasure. So actually, the pleasure and pain is a state of mind. Like, I was... long time ago, I remember one article, like that was experiencing how this concept of pleasure and pain, or how mind actually affects our body, or affects us. And they were giving an example that a man, you know, is blindfolded, and they were experimenting on him. Kind of, they made him feel that they were going to torture him. And so they were talking in such a way, he was blindfolded, tied up to a chair, and told him that they're going to they're hitting up a rod to kind of, you know, and that with that rod they will kind of pierce his body, or with a hot rod they will pierce his body. And they were talking, and someone says, is the hot rod hot enough? The other said, it's not red as yet, it will take a few more minutes. And this way they were talking. And then he said, okay, now it's hot enough. And they actually touched him with a cold rod. And the man screamed. And not only screamed, where they touched him, he developed a blister. So this is how mind actually affects our gross body. It was just a low temperature. So in this way, actually the mind is the cause of pleasure and pain, not this body. The senses are acting, but the senses are acting through the mind. Now we can give another example. When one is under the spell of anesthetics, then what happens? Doctor? Very good. The consciousness is actually withdrawn, not in the body anymore. The consciousness is artificially withdrawn from the body. And then the body is cut open and so many things are done. But probably the mind, that under spell of anesthetics, the man is thinking, oh, now I'm in heaven. Now I'm dancing with some apsara. So, in this way we can see that mind is actually the cause of our pleasure. Now, just in one sentence, Charubhata explained that. And that's why the words of a self-realized soul is so potent. Just one sentence can provide us with the materials to meditate for 100 years. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma. The mind actually creates this pious and impious activities and their karma. These activities are good for me because then I will get what I want. These activities are good because these activities will enable me to make a lot of money. And this is pious activity. And when something causes him to lose his money, then he thinks that that is an impious activity. The activities that provide him enjoyment in the material nature is pious. The activities that causes him to suffer in the material nature is called impious or sin. But both pious and impious, both pleasure and pain in this material nature is just a mental concoction. It's a creation of mind. So in this way, Jarabharata is explaining that the mind is the cause of the living entity's conditioning. The last thing is saying, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. Now, he is giving the cause of our conditioning. Now, how to become free from that conditioning? The mind is the cause of our bondage. So if we want to become free, then what should we do? We must free from the mind, free the mind. And what is the way to free the mind from the bondage of matter? By remembering Krishna all the time. Man mana bhava. See, that's why this man mana bhava verse is so important in Bhagavad Gita. This is the only verse that has been mentioned twice. Because once you can free the mind, then you are free. And how can the mind be freed? The yogis try to free the mind in so many ways. But first of all, the way they try it is very, very arduous, is very, very difficult process. And ultimately, they don't succeed in most cases. But here we are seeing that manmanabhava, just by thinking about Krishna, the mind will become Krishna conscious, mind will become free from the bondage of matter, and mind will become spiritually situated. Okay, it's already 8:05. So if there is any question, we can take a quick question, one or two. Who is the spiritual master? In this life, Jarabhar didn't have a spiritual master. He's a self-realized soul. As a Bharat Maharaj, let me see. There is no mention in Srimad Bhagavatam, but we can see that Jarabharat was received the instructions from Rishabhdev, his father. So in a way we can see that Rishabhdev was the Shiksha Guru. And Rishabhdev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Guru, if three modes of material nature control a human living entity, then how is this related to a soul or a mind?
Yeah. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasham. You see, the three modes are there, and accordingly, three types of activities are created. And the mind is acting on those three. Mind is acting, and the karma is taking place, the karmic reaction is taking place in the three modes. Or the three modes are influencing the living entities, and the living entities are acting in different ways.
So in whatever mode you are...
Say for example, somebody gives in charity, just the act of charity. Now the way the mind is thinking about, mind is thinking, accordingly the action will take place, the mode will be influencing. Like if somebody thinks that I am giving out in charity for the benefit of people without any selfish motivation, that's in the mode of goodness. Now it's the mind who is determining it. Right? Now somebody is thinking that I will give in charity, but as a result of that, I will get some good result, good benefit. That's in the mode of passion. And somebody gives charity thinking that if I give in charity, then people will think that I am such a great man. So, mode of ignorance. So the same action of charity, but the way the mind is functioning, accordingly the modes will be reacting.
So what is
something about the difference between karma, vikarma and akarma?
Karma is the Krishna conscious activity. The action that is performed for the sake of Krishna's pleasure is the real karma. And well, now let's put it this way. Actually Prabhupada is saying that is actually our karma that frees us from activities
Right.
Yeah. That is
akarma.
And then what is karma? That is karma. Or that's
authorized
actions are
karma. From the
and
moment we wake up till we sleep, every action we perform is karma.
No, not that.
If karma is done to get dharma or kama moksha, then that is not karma. If karma is done to just serve Krishna, that is akarma. Karma is done without religious.
That's become.
By the senses, that is become.
I have a little confusion. I mean, I get mixed up on this one because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his purport, he actually called Krishna conscious activity as karma. And the activities that doesn't produce the results of action is akarma. And the activities that causes us bondage to the material nature is vikarma.
Okay. So it's not karma that causes you bondage. It's vikarma.
Vikarma causes bondage. Karma, all are actually action. Karma is action, akarma is also action, and vikarma is also action. But trying not to act in order to become free from bondage is our karma, non-action.
Impersonal meditation.
But, yes.
What about, like, suppose person has done the charity, and the person who got the charity is using ignorance?
He gets some reaction.
We have to see the person.
The person who is giving the charity, therefore the charity must be given to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, those who will engage it in Krishna service. Otherwise, if the charity is given to a wrong person and if he misuses the charity, then the giver will also suffer the consequences.
But in India, all over the world, people, they just give charity, they think I have done good thing. But mostly the charitable money is done with the wrong
sources. Yeah.
Right. Is it country level or MD level also?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Just like we wear a shirt and we get the shape comes because it is on the body. But as soon as we remove the shirt, it becomes impersonal, there is no shape of a shirt. That's like, till we are in this body, with the spirit soul, the body is having a shape. As soon as we leave the body, body also becomes shapeless as gas decayed. So, till the spirit soul is there, the body is there, shape of the body is there. And like that, soul changes the different bodies and it gets different shapes. According to the karma. So what is the original shape of the soul?
Original shape of the soul will be recognized only when the soul becomes completely liberated.
It gets spiritual body?
Yes. The original shape of the soul is the shape of the spiritual body. But that we won't be able to recognize in the material plane or through the shape of the gross body. For example, or let's put it this way, when the living entity stops his spiritual activity, he is reduced to a spiritual spark. Because he doesn't have any spiritual activity, so what's the use of his spiritual body? Right. Since he stopped his spiritual activities, he is reduced to a spiritual spark. Right. And that spark activates the subtle body, which is caused by the desire, and the gross body to fit his subtle body. Right? But when one becomes engaged in devotional service, then through his devotional service, which is spiritual activity, his spiritual body develops. And that body develops fully when the subtle body wears off. Like then, no more mind, no more material mind, no more material intelligence, no more material quality. Instead, through devotional service, his mind has become manmana bhava, his buddhi has become dadami buddhi yogam tam. And his sarup has become Jigar sarup for Krishna Yuktaga. So then he dwells in his gross body as a Jivan Mukta. He doesn't have a subtle body anymore. He's dwelling in the gross body with his spiritual identity, with his spiritual form, with his pure spiritual liberated form. So that stage is called Jivan Mukta stage. Or sarup siddhi stage.
Yeah.
But when he becomes free from the gross body, that means when he leaves the gross body, then he attains vastu siddhi. That is, sarup siddhi is when the siddhi is there in the apparently gross body. Right? He is still in the body, so that is sarup siddhi. But vastu siddhi, vastu means substance, his spiritual substance. He attains his sarup in spiritual reality, free from the bondage of matter. That is the original spiritual body. Therefore, devotional service is the only way to become liberated. Only means of liberation.
Okay.
not yoga or anything. Yogas can help one come to the stage of platform devotion, but ultimate perfection will be attained through devotional service, not by anything else.
Acha Maharaj, when we reach the stage of Swarupa Siddhi, that time we come to know what is our original Swarupa in the spiritual world.
Yeah, but still he is in the body.
Left it, which you left there and come here.
Anyway, whatever it is,
yeah.
But like he is still, but still he is in his body. Say for example, we can say, like, say, to give an example, when Prabhupada was here. Now Prabhupada, we have to understand that he was in the Swarup Siddha stage. And he had an apparently gross body that he was dealing with us. But then again, that body was also not material. And in this respect, Prabhupada gives the example of iron and fire. Fire, iron rod in fire, it's iron, it's fire, right? Now if you say it is iron, then Prabhupada's response to that is, okay, touch it. So a self-realized soul, although even is in a material body, his body is not material. It's a spiritual body. Yes. Yes. Okay.
I want to know the difference between spirit, atma, chaitanya and mind.
Spirit, atma
and chaitanya.
Chaitanya is living force.
Soul.
Yeah.
And myself.
Okay. See, atma is the soul.
These are different entities?
Different entities, you can put it this way. They're separate and the same at the same time. Different and non-different at the same time. Just like fire, say, to give an example, there's a spark of fire. Right? The spark of fire is the soul. And the light coming out of the spark is the Chaitanya, is the consciousness. So that, you know, that way you have to see that just as light to fire, similarly consciousness is to the soul. So just as wherever there is fire, there must be light. Wherever there is soul, there must be consciousness. Sometimes the fire may be covered, sometimes the fire may be glowing, may be blazing. But the fire must be there. Soul is the self. Soul is
myself and the soul.
Yourself is the soul. Yourself is the soul. Or atma.
And soul is the part of Krishna.
Soul is the part and parcel.
The attraction of Krishna. Yeah.
But then again, in Bhagavatam, you are different. That's not different, but you are. He asked the question. You are not giving the class. Just keep quiet and listen. The spark, you know, like the spark, say, I'll give the same example. When the spark becomes isolated from the fire, falls in the heap of ash, the spark loses its quality of fire and heat and light. Right? So similarly, the soul, due to maya or ignorance, avidya, forgets about Krishna. When the soul forgets about Krishna, then it falls into mind. So it's the avidya that is causing the bondage of mind. It's a power. The soul, the Krishna, is the source of the soul, and the soul always has a link with Krishna. But the soul forgets about it. For example, the Paramatma is there in the heart of every living entity. And the Paramatma is actually guiding every Upadrashta Anumantacha. The Paramatma is the Upadrashta, he is the witness, and Anumanta, he is sanctioning everything for the living entity. Right? So if the Paramatma is actually, even now, the Paramatma is guiding us. Every single conditioned soul is being guided by the Paramatma. But the soul doesn't know. So it is not that the soul lost his link with Krishna. The soul has the link with Krishna, but he is oblivious of the link. Like a sparrow is flying, right? A car is going, right? It's just about to bump into the car, but there, just a fraction of an inch, you know, it turns around. Now who makes the bird to fly away? Who gives that intelligence to the bird? It's the super soul that is guiding the bird. That's why Krishna says, Matta Smriti Gyanam Apavanicha. The smriti, in memory, gyanam, knowledge, and apohanam, vismriti, comes from me. So, it's not that the living entity is ever separated from Krishna. Living entity is always connected to Krishna, but he's forgetful of Krishna, that relationship. And that forgetfulness is Maya. Vismriti. Like, another example can be given, you know, in this respect. To show how close we are to Krishna. You know, when we fall asleep, then there are two stages of sleep. Swapna, dream, and dreamless sleep. Now in the dreamless sleep, we actually come very, very close to Krishna. We are almost with Paramatma. But because, practically, we are lying in the same bed in Paramatma at that stage. But, you know, our consciousness is sleeping. We are not aware of it because our face was turned towards matter, and when we do not experience matter, we go blank. But if we just turn our face, then you will find that, you know, Krishna is there as Paramatma next to us. And devotional service is the process that makes one turn his face to his Krishna. Last question. Yeah. The charity and pure goodness is for Krishna. When you do it, when you give something, say for example, we are going out and distributing Krishna prasada. You see, we do not have any benefit for ourselves by doing that. We are not thinking that because we are giving Krishna prasada, we are getting pious activities and we'll get so many benefits. We don't think that. We do it simply for the sake of others' benefit. But what we are doing is, we are doing it for Krishna. Therefore, that's the charity in pure goodness. Let's stop now. Now, one thing not only Raghunath, I told that to you also yesterday. Like, when there is, especially when you're dealing with senior devotees, it's a transgression of etiquette if you try to interrupt or, you know, say something. Like, the purpose is to hear and chant. I mean, somebody chants or somebody speaks and somebody others hears. Now if we do not hear attentively, then we are not getting the benefit. And if we try to interrupt, that means we are not hearing carefully. So one should be very, very careful about that. And especially Vaishnava society is very structured. The etiquette is very important in the Vaishnava society. Even in, you know, like I know when I was child, in school, you hear. That when others are speaking, you don't say anything. You listen carefully. And then, when you finish, then only you respond. So, you see, my business is to give you the right understanding. So, you know, sometimes it may sound heavy, but you know what to do. Like, I have to give you the right understanding and the right way of doing things. That is the point of being sannyasi. That's the reason why should one teach. Okay. Hare Krishna. Jaya Srila Prabhupada.